26 minutes to, so be good to start. Any minutes of the meeting of the 19th? Anyone, any comments? Apologies.
Thank you, Chairman. Apologies received from Councillor Leeson and Councillor Loughran, who is substituted tonight by Councillor Dean McNaughton.
Officers' reports then. Starting with item 3A, Strategic Risk Register.
Thank you, Chair. So this report sets out the position at the 1st of April. It's our sort of kind of 6-monthly review. And there's two new risks that have been added to the risk register at this point. The first of them is a red risk, and it relates to homelessness, or meeting our homelessness statutory duty. And the concern there is that demand on the service has increased significantly. It's increased by 100% over the last couple of years. And at the same time, our ability to place households in settled accommodation has also become very challenging and expensive. So that's been added as a red risk. And then the second risk is an amber one, and we've badged that as relating to governance, and it concerns the implementation of the recommendations arising from the external auditor's value for money report, and the concern there being that if they're not implemented, it could lead to a failure in the council's governance arrangements. So I say, other than that, there's no change in the other risks or their scores. We continue to manage those, and you'll see a summary of kind of each of the risks and the progress we're making against them in Appendix 2.
Any comment from members?
Failure in the council's governance arrangements sounds quite euphemistic. Could you give us some sort of detail on what that means?
Well, governance covers kind of such a raft of things. But if you think back to the value for money report, it kind of covered our financial arrangements, it covered our procurement, our risk arrangements, our performance management. It's all those single components then that kind of interlink that make our governance framework. So a failure in any one of those could be quite significant. I mean, at the end of the day, we have to remember a risk doesn't mean something's going to happen, it's just there is that chance there. So we're flagging that we think there are some concerns there, that if we weren't to take on board the recommendations to the external auditors, it could result in a failure in one of those elements of our governance arrangement.
Happy with that?
We've
got the VFM report coming up later on, so unless anybody's got anything specific they wish to talk about. We'll move on then.
Just agree the recommendation, Chairman.
Recommendation is that the committee note the draft strategic risk register and considers the progress made in the identification and management of the strategic risks. Do we so note?
Yeah.
Yep. Thank you. So, move on to page
17, Chairman.
17. Thank you. The internal audit annual report.
Thank you, Chair. I'll take members through this. So this is the annual report for internal audit. So it covers a summary of the work that we've done throughout the year and gives the annual opinion of the Chief Internal Auditor, which is one of the sources of assurance that you should be looking at when considering the annual governance statement later in the meeting agenda. Before we go into the detail of the report this time, I'll just draw members' attention to Appendix 1, which starts on page 21 of the agenda today. That is the progress report of items that the committee haven't seen. So you will have seen a lot of the things in the annual report through the committee before, and obviously we did our last update at the meeting in March, which went up to the end of February. So this is the work that we've done since then. We've got two audits that we completed that are partial assurance, so that's bereavement services and the section 106, and one which was substantial assurance. In terms of follow-ups over the page, a couple of pages onto page 23, two follow-ups were done in that period. Both were partial to start with, and we were unable to revise the assurance. However, that sounds worse than it is, because both were very close to having their actions actually implemented. There were just minor things around timing and actually rolling things out that have now been agreed on those. So I'm not too worried about those, but happy to take questions on those reports that the committee haven't seen before we move on to the detail of the report itself.
Just a quick one, why cyber and network security is the four? Is that what we're looking at, implemented?
Oh, sorry, yeah. I think that should be in
am I in the wrong place?
Yeah, I think that's jumped across on there, so I will look at that. That should be four in progress rather than four, four implemented, I think. I will double check that for members. But it is, looking at the comments, it is still there, because we hadn't actually rolled everything out.
Okay.
So apologies on that one. If everybody's happy, I'll move on to the detail of the report. And really, this is our annual report. So it starts off with an introduction of what we do, why we do it, what the annual report's about. On page 26 of the agenda, we start talking about the requirement of internal audit. And then over the page on 27, there's discussion of the review of internal audit.
Before I let you off the hook, could you explain to the committee why we are still only partial on the section 106, please?
The section 106 was a partial assurance audit that we've done, and it really is, this is a second audit that we did following the audit in the previous year. Basically, we found that a lot of the systems that were put in place from the review weren't actually operating or operating as intended with the position that we're at. So there are still issues within that system. That means we can't be 100% sure we are picking up everything as quickly as it should be, making sure everything is documented. And also some of the issues at the front end, that officers not ticking boxes means that the automatic checks and interfaces that happen between systems aren't picking up that there are Section 106 implications. I think as well there's issues around the in-year inspections not happening, so we're not sure whether developments have reached the point to pay 106 money as well. So there's a whole raft of things that were looking to be addressed from the previous work done by Chris's predecessor with the officers, and we've gone in to check that is working, and it wasn't working as fully as intended.
Could Chris remind us how much money we're talking about here?
I couldn't give you a specific figure at this moment in time. We're currently working on our outturn position, so I'll be able to supply members with that shortly, next few weeks or so. It will be several million pounds in the totality of it, but some of that will be allocated. I'll be able to break that down and show members.
Okay.
And if I may, Chair, we asked the officers concerned to come and give a presentation at the leadership team recently about how they're doing things. That we will follow up these audit requirements, because we need to see an improvement on that, both for the reasons set out in the report, but also, as I think you're hinting at, there is a substantial amount of money there which needs to be used for the benefit of local residents, in part to being caught up in the system.
As we talked about, it is on risk. We don't spend it, the developer can ask for it back.
They can. I don't think we're at any imminent risk with any substantial amounts of money, but if they don't progress the schemes at a quicker rate than they've been doing, then we could re-inquire.
I just wonder whether the committee might find it helpful if in the future the high and the medium recommendations were split up so one could see it. Because, you know, if there are a number of high recommendations, that could be more serious than some medium ones.
Yep.
And if in a future presentation one could have high and medium separately, that it may help the committee to focus.
Yeah, that's certainly something we can link out in the format to the report, so that isn't an issue.
Just on on that.
Yeah.
Where it says, although legislation allows for an admin and monitoring fee, this is not currently being charged. Would it being charged mean that there was sufficient income to pay for some of the monitoring that is currently falling behind?
DJ, yes.
Could I suggest that you might finish up getting a tiger by the tail if you start charging and implementing the charging on the fees? They may start asking whether we've actually done the job or not, and then ask for the money back.
I think we're talking about future 106 agreements, but you're quite right, we need to get a house in order anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what we're seeking to do.
Okay.
I think a number of us share your frustration on this issue.
Thank you, Chris. Any other questions?
Are you happy for me to carry on, Chair, and just go through the bullet points on the annual report?
Before we do that, Chair, page 25, I don't know if everyone's seen this, section 5, about a third of the way down, on the right-hand side, error, bookmark not defined. I mean, I've got no idea what that means.
Looks like it's in there.
If I may, I think that's something that comes through when the PDFs are created and how it works. I think it's a technical issue in there, but we'll look to see if we can pick those up. It's where there's automatic links and bookmarks for numbers, and I think sometimes when it's printed, if it picks up an error or the document's changed, it can throw an error like that. So what that's looking for is would be a page number in the report that's not... That link has somewhere been broken, so we'll see.
Although through you, Chair, I assume all these reports are proofread, so someone picks it up before it gets to us.
I'll ask my colleague from corporate support.
I think proofread is a bit strong. I wouldn't say I read every single word of every single report, no.
So we're hoping not to see that again.
Absolutely.
Then. Yeah. Yes.
Not your fault.
Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Jeff. As I say, the report sets out a few key things. So we have, first of all, a review of internal audit, which is starting on page 27 of the report. And this just gives you, as members of the committee, assurance that we are an effective function and we're compliant with our standards. We include in there a satisfaction survey of managers, which, although the response rate has dropped a little bit from last year, actually for two out of the three questions we've asked, we've actually improved satisfaction overall, and the one that has dropped has only dropped very marginally in there. In terms of the review, as I say, generally we are fully conformant with the standards and we're seen as an effective section, which means you should be able to place assurance on the rest of the report and the findings in there. Sets out a little bit around our work. I think the key point, the key message is at paragraph 2.12, which is the top of page 30 of the agenda, and that is my opinion on the effectiveness of the council's governance arrangements. And for this year we have dropped, last year we gave a partial assurance, this year we are giving a limited assurance, which is saying that we have less confidence than we did last year, and we do have concerns around the governance arrangements and framework. And that's not something that perhaps is too much of a shock to the committee, having seen things like the external auditor's value for money report, but that's also based on the findings of our team, where we have seen more limited and partial assurances given in the work that we've done in the last 12 months, and also a slowing down in the implementation of recommendations. So we're seeing less recommendations implemented when we're doing the follow-up. So that picture is of a slightly worsening situation. So I didn't feel I could do anything more than give that limited assurance. The detail in there around the numbers of audits we've given at each assurance level and numbers of follow-ups we've done and the recommendations done. Probably the only other thing I would do is section 4 of the report talks about the performance of the actual team and the work that we've done, and that's on page 32 of the agenda. Members have been on the committee for the last year will have seen we did bring a revised plan out there because we decided we needed to reduce our commitment of work because we've had a member of staff resign. You may be surprised to then see that overall in the year we have done more than 100% of the work that we said we would do, but that is set out in 4.2 and 4.3, and really that is because we've got a hangover of work from the previous year. So we did less work than we planned in the year, but we managed to pull back through work of the contractor elements that should have been reported in the previous year. So that's just why that figure looks anomalous. I'm not going to dwell on anything else particularly in the report, other than to say it does set out the audits that we've done, give you their assurance ratings and what is in there. So happy to take any specific questions, Chair, but I don't want to dwell on anything else particularly.
Any questions from anyone?
Yeah.
Move on then, please.
So, Chair.
Oh, sorry.
I've got one about the fraud and irregularity work.
Yes.
You said no allegation has been received via confidential report and no anti-fraud corruption policy. Is this the process, if someone wants to whistleblow something,
yeah,
is this the process they have to go to? Who are these people?
Yes, it is. So what in some organisations would be a whistleblowing process,
yeah,
we have it as a confidential reporting because we treat external complaints the same as we would internal. So whistleblowing is quite often for internal people to raise the concern. We treat everything the same way. We give an open access. Those, essentially, it is myself. I'm the main person who would receive those, although Chris and Judith are also named and their contact details are in those policies to receive any complaints, but primarily it's my contact details.
If it's against you, what happened?
If there was a complaint,
you don't mean anything.
I say that is the main route. There are alternatives in there. So if it's a member of staff who wants to raise a complaint,
yeah,
we encourage them to raise it through normal management channels. If it's somebody external, we do have other contact details, so they could raise it through the complaints process. We do notify people that if they're not comfortable raising it internally, even through the confidential process, that they can go to our external auditors, they can go to other people, they can go directly to the police if they wanted to raise something. We do encourage everybody to come internally first, but in essence it's to there. And as I say, it is only as good as the information. Yes, we've had no reports. It doesn't mean to say people haven't got concerns and haven't wanted to raise them, but nothing has been raised formally.
Yeah. Okay.
Just as an aside, could I ask, there was some press report about a ginormous benefit fraud by Bulgarians?
Yeah.
Did any of it touch us?
No.
I was going to say, Chair, I'm not aware of that. I didn't even pick up on that story, so...
There's a group of individuals there were falsifying their records, and they were several million pounds taken out of the UK to there. So quite many of them never having been here.
Yeah.
I did follow that story.
Yeah.
Well, as far as
I thought it almost got into the billions.
Gosh.
It was large, but as far as I know, it's
universal credit, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And if I may, Chair, with housing benefits now, we generally don't get involved in that, and it's the DWP who do the investigation. So
yeah,
any reports of that come to us, although we still process them, any reports we hand over to DWP to investigate and follow up. So, yeah, but it is worrying when we've got those. I will, to reassure members, we do have various sources. So we're a member of NAFM, which is the National Anti-Fraud Network, and they are a public sector body, and we do get notifications of frauds at other local authorities that we pass on to relevant departments. We had one in the last week or so about direct debit frauds, where a couple of councils have had direct debits set up against their bank accounts for other services. But generally, yeah, we have got quite good processes for picking up things and being alert to those things as well. So just to reassure members that, yeah, we are as tight as we can be.
Yeah. Good. Nobody's claimed the chief executive salary again.
Not
like
yet.
Like happened a couple of years ago.
Only my wife.
Thank you. Yes, Chris.
Just on the whistleblowing thing, if it was internal and people weren't getting what they needed from us, they're allowed to do a public interest disclosure, a PIDA. They can reach out to our external auditors, and I'd always encourage people to do that as well. I think it's really important to have that transparency. So just looking around for that kind of information, it just sidesteps all of us, go straight to AZETS now, and we have no control of AZETS.
If I may, the part of the VFM action plan is to update that policy, and this is one thing because it is a few years since we last did it. Although there is a line in there, actually we can, with Chris, we can increase that and flag that up better for people to make that more aware. But that should be coming through in the next sort of 12 months in terms of the action plan.
Okay. Any questions on appendixes 1 and 2? One first. Appendix 2 on page 39.
I just have a remark. The ratio for S106 streets in are not really good, you know. It's 3 in progress, 4 in total, so it's a lot. And the same for street scene, so I don't know which operation is.
Oh.
6 out of 10.
If I may, Joe, can I just confirm the page reference you're on there?
Page 39.
39. Thank you, Chair.
Just implemented in progress total. And I think 3 out of 4 are in progress.
Yes, yeah.
Should be 3 out of 4 done. But we will get that.
It is, as I say, that is a statement of where we're at, and it's the officers responsible for those areas who would need to do it. I mean, as I say, it's one of the things in future when we get these coming through to the committee at the time, because these are at a point in time that if there are things like that that we're following up on, and certainly at a second follow-up, if you're seeing that level of sort of 6 out of 10 not done, then it may be things that you want to talk to the officers and get some money in to talk about those things.
Do you know what it is about for street scene, or is it a lack of people working, no employees, or?
Off the top of my head, through you, Chair, unfortunately I can't recall the exact details of every recommendation in that report, because it's not one we've done in the last quarter, so I would have to go back to the street scene report. I think from memory, there's a number of issues around there, around some of the external work that we do, how we contract that work, how we cost that work. There's some areas around some of the elements around overtime and staffing and things like that. And I understand. I think there was some elements where we seem to have a reliance on staff doing overtime rather than scheduling work and having the capacity, because that is a 7-day service to some extent, and we don't always have people on employment contracts for 7 days, and there was an over reliance on one or two members of staff in that team who were doing an awful lot of overtime, and we didn't feel that was appropriate, and that was flagged up in the audit. Now, whether where that is in terms of what was implemented and what wasn't, I can't say, but there are a number of factors in there. I do know that the relevant head of service is reviewing that external work and how we do it, and what's in place with legal and others to make sure we are having good contracts and agreements with people where we are doing it.
Thank you. Any questions on Appendix 3 on page 41? Anything you'd like to bring to our attention on that?
In terms of that final appendix, that is the action plan out of my review. As you can see, most of the actions are from previous year, which we have still got some in ongoing. Mm-hmm. We've only added one new action, which is to review ourselves against the new standards that have been released in January, which we will have to comply with from April next year. So we're waiting for some new guidance. As I say, I would have liked a few more other things to have progressed, but some of them are contingent on other things happening corporately, like the assurance mapping and those types of things. We need the organisation to know what it's doing so that we can then map to that. And there's an awful lot of change with the transformation and the service restructures that have been happening that have just caused those delays. So I'm not unduly concerned about not having done some of those things by now, but they are things that will help us improve and help the organisation.
If I may, yes. I've got a question. I know it could be stupid, but when you say 2023-2024, is it from the 6th of April or 5th of May? You know.
Yeah, if I may check, it's our financial year, so it's 1st of April to the 31st of March is the year that we have. Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so it's April. Just to check, because elections are in May, so I will.
Yeah. Yeah. So back to item 2.1. The recommendation is then that the committee note the internal audit annual report.
Duly noted.
Duly noted.
Thank you.
Yep.
Page 43 now.
Page 43. Oh, sorry. It's I thought right. You wanted me to sign it.
No, I'll get a copy for you.
Okay.
Okay, moving on then to the Value for Money Progress Report on page 43, agenda item 3C. Chris?
So I'll start off this item and Judith will follow up with the detail. And I'll try not to steal too much of her glory on this item. But fundamentally, it's been a really strong start for us in our response to the Value for Money report. Considering this was only approved a couple of months before this report was prepared, a lot of progress has been made about getting some of these core things in place. Notwithstanding the fact we have to create the action plan itself and the monitoring against it so that it's ready for audit committee so it can be fully transparent. We've got a lot of really significant improvements already under our belts with this, and a large number that are well underway. So a number of documents have been in draft, but we're all well aware of the local elections, the general election, the impact that's having on the council's resources to get some of these over the line. But we have prepared some others, for example, the digital strategy, been in draft, presented leadership team, we'll be finalising that, transformation strategy as well. So there's a few ones that have been done, but we couldn't reflect on this due to the timing of the reports. So there'll be a number of others that are coming through as well, which is really good. The one thing that I will draw to the audit committee's attention is the statement of accounts audit for this year just completed. We're not intending to go for a full audit of that at this moment in time either. We made that decision, we have spoken to our external auditors. It's an internal prioritisation around focusing on regeneration projects and supporting those. Due to the depth of the finance team at the moment, which we are addressing, and is on here as well, we can't support a full audit of our accounts at the same time as doing our outturn, supporting the regeneration projects and everything else we have on. So it was a conscious decision this year to do that, to prioritise it, and we've done that with a full risk analysis. As I was explaining to the chair earlier as well, we are still going to do the accounts, we're just not going to go for the audit. So we have valued the assets, because that's the moment in time, as we all know. We have had the pension fund liability and everything valued as well. So we have all of that data, we are putting together the statements at the same time. It's the audit we're not doing, rather than the actual statement of accounts. So we will still publish those in the future, get them back on track. We also need to note about the legislative backstop around the audits. Because of the general election, that's dropped off the docket, so that's not going to be passed into legislation as we anticipated, but that would be the dispensation of the two prior years. So we'll wait for that to come back on. So if we were to try and push through the audit now as well, it may be a bit, we're waiting to see, but it may end up being a wrap this year into that dispensation as well, in which case it may be that we would be better off taking that dispensation for the three and enticing up the next one, saving the money on the audits and focusing on that set of accounts while we get everything else in order. So I just want to make the audit committee aware of that as well. But I don't have information about that to that effect. It just seems that that's a possibility. We haven't dropped off at the moment in time. And we need to get it back on the legislative calendar.
One item you mentioned on there reminded me. What's the value of the pension scheme liability looking like?
I really couldn't tell you. I'd have to go and check. I don't know this year. Yeah. But I could find out for you.
Yeah, because I do know with the change in the interest rates, a lot of the defined benefit schemes improved their outlook remarkably well. Mm. I was just wondering whether our one had.
We did well last time as well. I would hope that we were fully funded near enough at our council last time. So I would hope that we are doing better than that now. Yeah. We can reduce our pension contribution at the next valuation. But I'll get the actuarial assumptions. They have the tendency to make a life expectancy longer when there's good news and make sure that we still pay in a certain amount. But I'll be able to speak to that when we get them back.
Okay, thank you. Judith.
I suppose really just to explain what we've actually done. When we brought this through originally to the committee back in February to get approval for the improvement plan, it was all done by the themes that were set out in the value for money report. What we've done this time to try and make it easy for the committee to monitor progress is reordered it by quarter now. We've only put a commentary in against the items that were due in that last quarter of 23-24. Where we put some updated commentary on all the work that's in action, but we've not counted our progress on that. So of those 15 actions set out for quarter four, one of them is no longer relevant, that's the one that Chris has just referred to in terms of the statement of accounts. And of the other then, the remaining 14, an even split, 7 have been completed in full, and the other 7 work is in progress, but we've not quite completed it by the end of that quarter. And again, as Chris alludes to, a lot of those are around policies that have been drafted, they just haven't quite made it over the line into leadership team. A number of those have sat with me, and again, as Chris mentioned, a couple of them have now been into leadership team, but they've not gone to cabinet yet for approval. So we should see a number of those move through in the next progress report.
Any questions on this big piece of work that the team are undertaking? A 19-page appendix with 16 individual items on it. A huge piece of work. Well, congratulations on your progress so far. Hope we continue.
That's all to the teams.
Another recommendation, Chairman, please.
Yeah, recommendation is to note the progress at the end of the 2023-24 in the delivery of the VFM implementation plan set out in Appendix 1. So noted.
Thank you. We're on page 66, Chairman.
Page 66. The annual governance statement for 23-24.
Thank you, Chair.
Is your stage, Judy?
This one is indeed mine. So the council has to have in place governance arrangements, and we are required by law to undertake at least once a year a review of those arrangements. So the annual governance statement sets out the review process and the findings from that review, and then where we have got any issues, what actions we're going to take. So the main sources of assurance we've taken for this are the strategic risk register, Stephen's annual internal audit report, and then assurances from the statutory officers. There are other sources as well, and that's why we deliberately construct the agenda for this committee meeting in that order, because this kind of pulls together all the items that you've already heard about. It also reflects largely a number of the issues that we raised last year and have been set out in the external auditor's value for money report. So there's very little in there that's actually new. I will go through the things that have changed, and the first of those actually is to say this year, in terms of our overall assessment and the opinion on our governance framework, again in line with Stephen's conclusions in the internal audit report, we are giving a limited assurance. And again, that reflects the fact that we had a statutory recommendation from the value for money audit. In terms of the items that are new and additional, if I turn to section 6, which starts on page 75, and that section sets out the significance of government issues. Now, traditionally, at this point, you would have a table that sets out the issue and the action. Not set out the action this time. What I've done instead, I've done you a cross-reference to the improvement plan, so that the committee will only have one improvement plan to monitor going forward. And as the bulk of the actions were already pre-identified, there are only a couple of new ones that we've added in. So the ones that have been added in are the meeting the homelessness statutory duty. We've not added that directly into the improvement plan itself. We're picking that one up by the risk register, because that was new on the risk register this time around, and we've already touched on that one. The new one that we've not talked about is project management of the town centre transformation work. And what we're saying here is, obviously, the council's got some very ambitious plans and projects to deliver these. But the project planning, we're not saying there isn't any, it's just not quite as robust as it needs to be, or coordinated across the various schemes to make sure that we can deliver everything in the way that we want to. I think we're recognising as well that there is some capacity issues, not just in the team that's primarily delivering, but those that are supporting the delivery of that as well. So there's an action around that to kind of review those arrangements and improve on them, and that's been added to the main improvement plan. The next one then is around development management and the backlog of the planning applications and a budget overspend on that. So the backlog itself has reduced quite considerably, but this has come at a cost, and that has resulted in an overspend. We're also acknowledging there that actually what it really needs is some transformation work to make sure that we don't end up in this position again. So the action that's been added to the improvement plan is very much centred around doing that piece of transformation work so that we can fundamentally change the way we do that and we don't end up in that position, and at the same time kind of claw back on that overspend so that we don't end up in that position again. I think, Chair, they're all the things that are new and are different for this year's government statement. Say everything else has been either well rehearsed through the annual audit report or the auditor's VFN report, and indeed we're acknowledging last year's statement. We are looking for the committee to really kind of assure themselves that we've covered everything, there's nothing that's missing from that statement.
This one is the item that we are asked to approve. Yeah. This annual government statement, not just to note it. So if you have comments. It would appear that we have a nomination on the lines that we approve the recommendations. Yeah. In that case, I will duly sign them. I noticed the Leader of the Council and the Chief Executive has to sign this one as well. So we're all on the hook. Okay.
Can I just ask about the finance system? Notice I said you're still having problems with the finance system. And was it section 4, isn't it? Finance team system. Since you've got vacancies, but you also you've got problems with the finance system.
Is this item 4 you're looking at?
Yeah.
Finance team are continuing to experience capacity issues.
Yeah, and at the bottom it says problems also continue with the finance system. Needs further development work and training of you.
If you look at page 78, 1.3, 4, and 5, I think it is, those then give you the detail of what that means. The numbers on the right hand side refer to the next appendix.
Yeah, if I can, Chair. Those items were largely acknowledged in the external auditor's value for money report, and then we're just kind of putting it all together really in this one and saying cross-referencing it back to the improvement plan that had already been agreed on that. There's nothing new, certainly, from the Vietnam report. It hasn't got any work since then. I think it's just reflecting the position we were in.
I was just thinking, as we hear all these stories of computer systems and finance, that's what we're going to do.
I can speak to this a bit.
Yes, please.
A lot of the press has been around the Birmingham system recently. We haven't done anything remotely like that. The scale, we didn't try to take a giant off-the-shelf package and then rebuild it ourselves or anything like that. Ours is more a case of sufficient resource to implement a relatively vanilla version of the software. The challenges we faced were the resourcing of that during the build. So it's taken a huge amount of the finance team's time to get it up into a running fashion. But now we need to try and maximise it and get more out of it so it starts to do that with automation. We need to look at things potentially, which is down the line, the CLR development plan, things like mid-call, which is when we can start to automate more of our phones and take pressure off there so some of the manual reconciliation will drop out. We need to start looking at some of the automated reconciliation in our banks. So at the moment that's done by an actual team of mine. We've got a number of individuals that sit there and reconcile those bank statements manually to our cash book. That's not really normal this day and age. You'd only be picking out the suspense items, but I have people manually reconciling and some other elements. We really need to start to invest in the team to get some of those dashboards out so we can take pressure off my team so that we can get that information out to budget managers. And as part of the training that we're going to start, give them access to the system, the next step is to maximise it and try to get more in general from it. A lot of councils do use the Civic Financial System. It's not a top shelf one, but it is a solid one, and we just need to make sure that we get more out of it from IT to free capacity. So there's some of the problems we have. It's very labour intensive due to our build and where we are. There's probably going to be need to buy modules because that's the way software providers work, but we want to be very careful we don't do a Birmingham, as you say.
Yeah.
The training of managers in budget management.
Yes, definitely.
That's a quarter two, isn't it, this financial year?
Yeah. Okay, if everyone's happy, I will sign that off in due course.
Thank you.
And, takes us to all the items on the agenda.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for coming, ladies and gentlemen.